Welcome to Rights Watch, a program about human rights around the world from Human Rights Watch. I'm Jesse Graham. It's June 15th. Today we're talking about rape in Congo. The war in Congo has taken 5 million lives, and all sides in the conflict have used rape as a weapon of war.
For each woman who was telling me their story, there were thousands who I would never talk to.
We'll hear from a filmmaker and a playwright who've reached large audiences, won awards, and inspired action through their work on this difficult topic.
When I first began this journey and this woman said, what can you do to help us? I thought, I'm just a playwright. I literally don't know what I can do. But I realized I'm armed with a really powerful tool, which is my creativity.
Lynn Nottage won this year's Pulitzer Prize for her play, Ruined. It takes place at a brothel in a remote mining town in Congo. Mama Nadi holds court there. Her customers are rebels, government soldiers, and prospectors. She provides food, booze, music, and women. All of the women in the play have endured rape, brutality, even mutilation, subjects people usually turn away from. Reporter Amy Costello recently sat down with Lynn Nottage at her home in Brooklyn.
In many ways, in thinking about Ruined, I thought in some ways it could have risked being the play that nobody wanted to see.
And that is definitely true, and I was very aware of that in the process of writing it. So I think that it probably took twice as long as most of the plays that I've worked on to sort of conceive of and eventually put down on the page, because I knew that the subject is very dark, it's very difficult, and not something that you immediately think about when you think of when you go to the theater. But I felt it was an important subject. I felt that there's a way to tell the story that would be engaging for an audience, and I set about trying to find that way.
In what way did you discover that you could tell this story?
Well, it's a phrase that I've used often to sort of describe the process, which was to sustain the complexity of modern Africa, which means including the humor and the beauty as well as the ugliness. And so you get a full picture of what's going on. It's showing both the light and the dark, which allows the audience moments to breathe and to sort of enjoy themselves in the midst of all of the brutality and ugliness that they see on the stage.
And ultimately, when people knew what the subject matter of the play would be, even if you had these kind of moments of brightness and laughter and beautiful singing, did you fear still that the audience would stay away knowing what ultimately the subject matter was about?
When we did our very first preview in Chicago, I was sort of overwhelmed by the response of the audience. I definitely thought that there would be people who would sort of flee the theater angry or flee the theater in tears. But I feel as though we're in an age in which the audience wants to engage with more complicated, timely issues than they generally see on the stage. I think that the way it's told is done with compassion and with complexity. And I think that's what keeps the audience there, is that I'm telling the story of four women, which is a story about women in Congo, but it's a universal story. It could be anywhere. It could be Bosnia. You know, it could be Burma. It could be any place where women find themselves in the shadow of war.
When we talk about Ruined, we're talking about things that include more than rape.
Right. So specifically, when I'm using the word ruined, I'm talking about a woman who is fistulous, someone who's been so badly disfigured that her genital area has been mutilated, almost beyond repair.
Do you think a man could have written this play?
I think a man could have written this play, but not in the way that I wrote it. I think that a man could have directed the play, but it wouldn't have been the production that we had. I think that there's a kind of sensitivity and gentleness with which the subject matter is handled. And I also think that there would have been a temptation for the men to put more of the ugliness on stage and not sort of find the spirit of resilience and power within these women. And I've heard a lot of criticism about the play. They say, oh, you end with optimism. I said, of course I end with optimism. These women who I interviewed walked miles to tell their stories, and they told their stories because they believed that there was light at the end of the path, you know, that they didn't tell their stories because they wanted me to pity them. They told their stories because they wanted to transform their situations, and they wanted to rescue other women, and they wanted to stop the pattern of violence. And so it was very important for me to end with optimism, and I don't think that a man would have gotten to that point.
In your play, you show both government and rebel soldiers frequenting this bar. That's the central gathering place in the play. And I'm wondering, In writing this play and in researching these issues, do you see the men in uniform as perpetrators only, or do you see them as victims in any way too?
Well, I see them as both things, and I think that the play demonstrates that, is that there is a legacy of oppression in the Congo that has left its marks on all men. And I think that there's something unique that happens when men put on uniforms, that they do things that they wouldn't think they're necessarily capable of. Are they bad people? In some cases, yes. In some cases, no. You know, do they get caught up in the stream? Sometimes yes, sometimes no. And I think that it's really important to sort of show that balance, that not all men in uniform are bad men, but some of them are. And I think that in the play, I have a character in particular named Fortune, who is the husband of one of the women who's been brutalized, and he becomes a soldier because he's seeking revenge for what he's felt has been done to him. But he comes to realize that this is not going to restore my life. This is not going to give me back my family. This is not the path for me to take to resurrect my life. And I think that it's a very complicated journey that a lot of men take. And I think that men respond to the play because they do see that balance, that it's not about demonizing men. It's about trying to have a conversation and understand why do these men, who in some cases are victims, they're very young boys who get swept into this war and they're told that they must kill in order to eat.
Have you seen any ways that your play has helped to bring more attention to this issue, or in what ways has your play served to bring light to this issue?
You know, I think that, for one, I'm reaching a fairly large audience of folks who generally are not going to engage with this issue on a regular basis. These are folks who go to the theater to be entertained and find themselves surprised by what they see, and I hear from many who leave that they want to do something tangible. You know, and one of the remarkable things, I feel that this play has really been well supported by a lot of the human rights organizations that feel that that it drives the issue home in a way that press releases and articles in the newspaper cannot, because I'm asking people to sit down for 2.5 hours and get to know these women. And you can't do that when you read one paragraph about the atrocities that have been committed. And I think that once you know them, you think about the issue differently. And, you know, one of the things that I'm really proud of, it's on later this month, the Secretary General of the UN is going to come and see the play, and the Director of the High Commission for Human Rights is going to see the play, which means that we are reaching the people who can really make a tangible difference. And I'm sort of astonished that when I first began this journey and these women said, what can you do to help us? I thought, I'm just a playwright. I literally don't know what I can do. But I realized I'm armed with a really powerful tool, which is my creativity. And I can tell this story in a way that a journalist can't tell this story. And I can drive it home in a way that the human rights organizations can't. I can do what I believe art does, is that we heal the soul, and we're soul healers.
Lynn Nottage, playwright and winner of the Pulitzer Prize for your play, Ruined. Thank you so much for speaking with me today.
That was reporter Amy Costello. Ruined is playing at the Manhattan Theater Club. Rape in Congo is also the subject of Lisa Jackson's documentary, The Greatest Silence. Jackson's film was featured in the Human Rights Watch International Film Festival last year. Since then, the film has inspired ordinary people and policymakers to take action on the issue. Christina Salerno reports.
In 2006, Lisa Jackson traveled to Congo on a news assignment. There, she met dozens of women and girls who were raped by militia fighters, rebels, and Congolese soldiers. She asked a local group to assemble rape survivors for interviews.
And the next day, 18 women showed up, all who wanted to talk to me about their stories, and each one was more horrifying and pulverizing than the one before. I realized that for each woman who was telling me their story, there were thousands who I would never talk to, and that their stories needed to be told. So at that moment, I committed myself wholeheart to getting their stories out there.
Jackson had something in common with the Congolese women. She was gang raped in 1976 in Washington, D.C.
They asked about the war that was happening in my country.
I told them there'd been no war in Washington, D.C. back then, and that any woman could become a victim at any time.
The women in the film share their stories of rape in painful detail. The film also features heroes, a male doctor who repairs fistula, a police officer who Jackson calls a one-woman special victims unit, and Jackson's friend and translator, who is fighting to protect his daughters. Jackson says women often come up to her after screenings to tell their own stories of rape. And audience members have helped push for justice for Congolese women.
The Human Rights Watch screenings, of course, attract a lot of activists, a lot of policymakers, a lot of people from local NGOs, and I've had countless opportunities to exploit that audience. People want to set up foundations. They want to use a pre-existing organization to channel money to the Congo. If the DRC wasn't on their agenda, suddenly it is.
The film helped put Congo on the agenda of former United States Ambassador to the UN, Zalmay Khalilzad. After attending a screening, he spoke about the issue in front of the UN Security Council. Soon after, the Security Council passed a resolution that classifies rape as a weapon of war.
But I think the bigger result has been the galvanizing of public opinion around the issue. People who had never, who couldn't find Congo on a map, now suddenly are organizing, have become activists, or donating money, or passing the film along, websites, links, reading all they can, having house screenings, pressing the film on friends, and you know, beginning to see real coalition of people coming together around the issues of that the conflict in the Congo raises because of the film.
Back in Congo, the documentary has helped open up the conversation about sexual violence.
I took the film back to show it to everyone who was in it last year, and they said, we are happy that the world is seeing this and that the time for silence is over.
Jackson hopes her film will help pressure the Congolese government to prosecute rapists, especially those who are in positions of power in the Congolese army. For Human Rights Watch, I'm Christina Salerno.
You can learn more about Lisa Jackson's film at thegreatestsilence.org. And if you'd like to see more films like hers, check out the Human Rights Watch International Film Festival. It's going on in New York through June 25th. That's Rights Watch for this week. Human Rights Watch is an independent organization dedicated to defending and protecting human rights around the world. For more about us, including audio, video, and multimedia features, please visit hrw.org. Thanks for listening to Rights Watch. I'm Jesse Graham.